Among the most familiar stories from ancient history is that of Cleopatra. She was the mighty Egyptian queen who conquered the hearts of Julius Caesar and Mark Antony, who sailed away from Antony in the midst of a last desperate naval battle against Rome, and then committed suicide by clutching an asp to her breast. It's such a tragic romantic tale, especially when played by Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton in Gloria CinemaScope. At least that seems to be the way many imagine her today. But of all the tragic heroines from history, why have we singled out Cleopatra for such immortality? And how close are our representations of Cleopatra to the reality of her? Joining us today to explore our enduring fascination with the last queen of Egypt is Ms. Susan Walker from the Department of Greek and Roman Antiquities in London's British Museum. Ms. Walker is a co-editor of Cleopatra from History to Myth, a sumptuous catalog of the museum's recent exhibition of Cleopatra images over the last 2,000 years. Welcome, Ms. Walker.
Thank you.
How would you describe the British Museum exhibit in terms of its chronological scope and the range of the items on display?
Well, we were trying to examine the historical Cleopatra and put her into the context of relations between ancient Rome and Egypt. And then we wanted to look at how Cleopatra, as a historical figure, became a creature of myth. So in the exhibition, we had objects which ranged from the time of the early Ptolemaic rulers of Egypt, that is, the successors of Alexander the Great, one of whose generals was actually called Ptolemy, and became ruler of Egypt at the end of the 4th century before Christ. And we run right the way through to modern times, to the late 20th century, because, as you rightly say, we're still very, very interested in Cleopatra. And it's fascinating to see how she's been perceived over the two millennia since her death.
What types of materials do you have on display, or did you have on display in this exhibition?
We had a very wide range of materials, including surviving statues. There are not very many surviving images of Cleopatra, but one of the most exciting features of the exhibition was that we were able to identify Egyptian-style images of her, not all of which had been recognized before. So we had quite a number of stone images of the major players, as it were, both Cleopatra and members of her family, Caesar, of course, Antony and Octavian. We also had bronzes, mosaics, terracottas, stone reliefs, vases recently discovered in Alexandria, Cleopatra's capital city. We had also paintings and even a fan from the 19th century with a magnificent representation of Cleopatra and Antony and the suicide of Cleopatra. To my astonishment, she even shows up on watches in 18th century England, which was a great surprise. Drawings, all sorts of things. I mean, Cleopatra gets onto everything, and we wanted really to show the range of representations of this remarkable figure. Indeed, in the Chicago version of the exhibition, which went to the Field Museum from last October until March of this year, there were also costumes worn both by Liz Taylor and earlier stars of films about Cleopatra.
Who was the historical Cleopatra the Seventh? I mean, without the myth, without the romance.
She was a very ambitious and successful queen of Egypt. a person who achieved great political power and a person with enormous charisma. And she's still regarded very positively in Egypt. It's very interesting that we have such a divide in perceptions of Cleopatra. It's quite hard to get at the real Cleopatra, but there are kernels of truth in the contemporary accounts of her. And I think it was a great help to recognize those Egyptian images. I hope we've managed to restore some kind of balance in the account of Cleopatra.
Was she really that good of a ruler, or did she achieve power just because she was good at seducing men?
She was, it does seem, irresistibly seductive. But would Caesar have left her in charge of Egypt had he not thought her competent? I don't think so.
How did her contemporaries portray her, both in writings and in artworks?
Well, in Egypt, Cleopatra was regarded as a divine ruler, and she was very closely linked to the goddess Isis. And motherhood is a very strong theme in Egyptian representations of Cleopatra, both in freestanding sculpture and significantly on stone reliefs, which still survive in some temples of Egypt. So motherhood is a very strong theme in these representations. And in Rome, too, Cleopatra became the first living ruler to share a temple with a god. In Rome, she shared a temple with Venus the Mother, very significantly, in a new forum constructed by Julius Caesar.
Caesar, of course, being from a family that claimed to be descended from Venus.
That's right. And it's very significant, I think, that he commissioned a statue of Cleopatra, which was set up in this temple. And so that idea of Cleopatra as a divine ruler and a mother is actually carried over even to Rome. And amazingly, the statue survived for several hundred years. It seems to have been passed off by Octavian, who, of course, as you mentioned, conquered Cleopatra in 30 BCE. And after that, he seems to have passed off this statue as something that he brought back in triumph from Alexandria. It became very much associated with his victory rather than with Cleopatra's affair with Caesar, which for Octavian was, of course, a matter of some embarrassment.
We have a positive representation of Cleopatra and Caesar's statue, but how did the Romans eventually come to portray her, and how did that influence later images of her?
In the 30s BCE, after Caesar was assassinated, Cleopatra took up with Mark Antony, another Roman general of enormous stature, who was clearly very much in love with her. And Cleopatra sought to expand Egypt's influence and even managed to recover the core of the old Ptolemaic Empire with territories outside Egypt which were awarded to her by Antony. And this caused great alarm in Rome, and Octavian, who was Caesar's heir, orchestrated a great campaign against Cleopatra. Cleopatra was an enormous threat to him because she had had a son by Caesar who was co-ruler of Egypt with her. And Octavian, in contrast, although he was Caesar's heir, he was only his rather obscure great-nephew. And so he tried to attack Cleopatra's relationship with Antony and portrayed her as an insatiable ruler of extraordinary greed and extravagance, whom Antony had been completely unable to resist. So she became a monster and a representation, if you like, of the other, of the un-Roman. She had made Antony unmanly and thereby un-Roman. And she was a person of enormous sexual and gluttonous appetite. And so we have a very negative image of Cleopatra, which becomes stronger and stronger in Rome in the period leading up to the Battle of Actium, which is the naval engagement in which she was defeated by Octavian. After that, it was necessary to build up a slightly more positive image of her as a powerful queen in order to make Octavian's victory seem greater than it actually was. I think at the time, though, it was perceived as a very, very significant defeat. And we've become really captives of Octavian's propaganda. This is very much the image of Cleopatra that we've inherited. And it's come down to us in a very interesting way, which I'll briefly explain. It's slightly softened in the version that we have because Shakespeare, for example, was drawing for his play, which is enormously influential in later Western European and American perceptions of Cleopatra. He was drawing on the biographies of Antony and Caesar written by Plutarch. And Plutarch was a Greek intellectual who lived about 100 years or so after these momentous events happened. And so Plutarch is writing from a Greek perspective at a time when the Romans were much more comfortable with Greeks than they were in Cleopatra's day. And so we've got a slightly softer view. We've got a view which allows room almost for Cleopatra's perspective. I mean, to a Greek, Cleopatra would have been a rather amusing and almost a sympathetic figure. So we have in Shakespeare's play something that is already there in Plutarch. We have the image of a queen who is very demanding and very, very extravagant, but who eventually comes through as an individual with enormous integrity because she committed suicide after her defeat rather than submit to Octavian. So we have someone who's a sort of symbol of Oriental despotism, but whose individual personality wins through in this tragic love affair. And it's not for nothing that Dryden called his play All for Love. And that's another perception of Cleopatra that's very important to us, that she gave up everything, even her own life, for love of Antony.
I have to ask the obligatory question. Was Cleopatra beautiful?
That's a really tricky one because the surviving images of her are really icons more than portraits. And it's very difficult to recapture any notion of what she really looked like from the surviving sculptures and coins. Ancient authors tell us that she had a very beautiful voice, and I think that's very important. We tend to underrate the voice these days. We're very obsessed with the visual image, but voices are very important in the art of seduction. And she was clearly a person of enormous charisma, the kind of person who would light up a room and you would just have been drawn to her.
Why do you think we remain intrigued by Cleopatra 2,000 years later?
Cleopatra is a very strong character, and her story has absolutely everything. It's got power politics, it's got sex, it's got romance, it's got death, and it has all the elements of the very best stories, and I really don't think that the elements of the great stories have changed very significantly over the past 2 millennia. And in addition, I think people still understand, though they may not remember all the details, that the defeat of Cleopatra by Octavian was something very important for our history. It just happened at a great turning point in history, and that's very significant still.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Walker.
My pleasure.
We have been talking with Ms. Susan Walker from the Department of Greek and Roman Antiquities in London's British Museum and the co-editor of Cleopatra, From History to Myth.